Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or DSL Extreme. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, August 19th, 2007, on the premier radio networks, including XM Channel 152 and 31 of the best, the finest darn talk stations in the nation, including KFI in Los Angeles, KGO in San Francisco, WMAL in Washington, D.C., and many, many more. This is show 380. Thanks for listening. Well, a very good day to you. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my number. Love to hear from you. If you want to talk about tech, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's easy to remember. Or for the alphabetically challenged, that would be 888-827-5536. Steve's on the board, Antonio's on the phones, and we want to get your calls right now. 888-827-5536 to talk about tech. So much to talk about today. I want to begin my sermonette. I think of this little portion at the beginning of the show as the sermonette. I want to begin my sermonette on good guys and bad guys. The tech industry is just like any other industry. It's got your good guys, got your bad guys. And I think if you've listened to me at all, you know who I think the bad guys are. They're pretty obvious. I'll give you three. There's more than three, probably, but there's three on my list. They're on my list. The Recording Industry Association of America, and I'll lump the MPAA, the Motion Picture Association of America, in with that. For their continual criminalization of their customers and their inability to see the new world order. The wireless phone companies are on my list. They're on my list. You know, I just found out you can't get an iPhone in Vermont. You can't get an iPhone in Vermont because AT&T isn't in Vermont. Apparently they just, you know, we don't like the cheddar. I don't know. They're not in Vermont. And since you can't use an iPhone unless you can get AT&T and they won't let you roam full time. You can only roam, 40% of the time? If you do more than that, they cut you off. So you can't use an iPhone in Vermont. You can't get one in Vermont. If you're a Vermonter, forget it. That's a whole state. Not to mention, and I know we have a lot of listeners overseas, and not to mention everybody in the rest of the world, Canada and Australia and Europe, but Vermont? Are you saying that Vermont's not a part of the continental U.S.? But that's not the only reason I hate the wireless companies. The cell phone companies have taken advantage of us for years. They've acted like a monopoly, even though they're not. Which means essentially they're colluding, in my opinion. They seem to be colluding with one another to keep you locked in. The two-year lock-in where they charge you a huge cancellation fee. Even on a phone like the iPhone where you're paying full freight. It's not like they're subsidizing the phone. But they do it because they can. So I got a new company to add to my list. You're on my list, baby. Comcast is on my list. Nobody likes the cable company. In fact, I saw a survey once that put cable companies higher than heart attacks in as the things people hate the most. But this is really frying my bacon. This, I think, is going to fry your bacon too. And I have to qualify it because I'm not seeing other news organizations pick this story up. I think they will. And remember the debate over net neutrality? The idea that and it was started, frankly, by AT&T. Rattling its saber, saying, we don't like the fact that Google is free riding on our network. Huh? We don't like the fact that all that bandwidth that Google's using, they're not paying extra for. We're paying for it as customers. Google's paying for their bandwidth from their internet service providers. I'm not sure where it comes off that Google's not... Oh, AT&T wants some money from Google, I guess. Well, once they said stuff like that, then people got a little nervous that maybe companies like AT&T and Verizon, the big internet service providers, Comcast, might start to look at data bits as some bits as better than other bits. Net neutrality is a confusing term. I prefer to think of it as we're against discrimination on the net. We don't want, for instance, Comcast to say to, BitTorrent, we don't like BitTorrent traffic. We're going to make sure that BitTorrent traffic, legal or not, we're going to make sure that it's, you know, not on our network or really slow down. We don't like Vonage voice over the internet because we sell our own voice over the internet. So we're going to make sure that Vonage doesn't work on Comcast. That's net discrimination. That's what the net neutrality debate is about. And there's a legitimate, you know, concern that, well, maybe the government shouldn't be getting into this business of legislating this. Maybe the market should rule here. And it's true, if you're in a market where you have many choices of internet service, okay, I guess you could go to somebody else. But most markets, you might have one or two or three choices. And if all three of them do it, where are you going to go? So here's the story. According, and this is coming from Comcast users. And Slashdot writes about this. And they're basing it on an article from Torrent Freak. Now, and this is why, I'm going to have to put a little bit of an asterisk next to this. Because Torrent Freak is a site for news for people who like to use BitTorrent. What is BitTorrent? Let me explain first what BitTorrent is. For those who don't know, it's a great way of distributing large files at no cost. So when I started doing video, for instance, for my podcasts, I used BitTorrent because these were such big files, I couldn't afford the bandwidth. And the way BitTorrent works is everybody who downloads the file then shares their piece of the file with other people so that it's a distributed system of distribution. And no one person carries all the bandwidth cost. It's great. And if a file is popular, so that a lot of people have it on our what they call seeding it. Seeding it means offering your piece of it to other people. If a lot of people are seeding it, it works really, really well. It's not a great piracy technique. I mean, this is the movie industry hates the idea of any way of distributing big files free. That scares them, of course. But BitTorrent is in its design not very good for piracy, because when you get a piece of a film, let's say it's an illegal download, you can see exactly who you're getting it from. It's not hidden, unless you go to great lengths to hide it. So it's not a secret in any way. You know, it's not a good way to kind of sneakily distribute films. Admittedly, a lot of films and copyrighted material is distributed by BitTorrent, but also a lot of stuff that is legit, things like Linux distributions that are giant, are distributed by BitTorrent. So the story from Torrent Freak, over the past weeks, more and more Comcast users have reported that their BitTorrent transfers were not slowed down, cut off. Cut off. Not merely packet-shaped so that they don't go as fast, but disabled. They've been unable to seed. Now, ISPs have been doing this kind of throttling for a while. I mean, other internet service providers are doing this. But usually what they'll do is they'll cut the amount of bandwidth available for BitTorrent. And there are good ways to get around this. But apparently Comcast is actually preventing their customers from seeding. Now, this is something that has happened in Canada. It's reported that Comcast is using an application from Sandvine to break the seed after a few seconds if it's not peering over to another Comcast user. That makes it virtually impossible to seed a file if you don't have other Comcast users you're seeding it to. So in other words, you can use BitTorrent with other customers, but not outside to the internet. It's also using something called deep packet inspection, which is a scary term, and rightly so. It means they aren't just looking at the port or the protocol. They're actually looking at what's going on, what's inside that packet. They're actually looking deep inside the packet to figure out what you're doing. So the question is, if you pay for an internet connection, if you pay for, quote, unlimited bandwidth, shouldn't you get unlimited bandwidth? Shouldn't all bits be the same? Should your internet service provider get to decide what you can and cannot do? It's, I want to underscore this. Now, sometimes BitTorrent is used for illegal purposes, but it isn't inherently illegal any more than the internet is inherently illegal. It is a form of file transfer, very useful for a lot of legitimate purposes. So Comcast can't make the argument, oh, we're preventing illegal use of the internet. That's not it. They just don't want people using that bandwidth. So you're on my list, Comcast, joining the list of greedy corporations who are misusing technology, who are acting in ways that are against our interest. Now, remember, I'm always on your side. I'm a user. We're users. We're together in this. What do you think? I'd love to hear from somebody at Comcast. No denial coming out of Comcast, although, again, I have to say this is, you know, this is a kind of anecdotal story. Nobody's admitted it either from Comcast. But if it's true, should they be allowed to do this? And then what happens? Now, do you go to another provider? What if the, you know, in many cases, there's only a couple, you know, the phone company and the cable company. What if both of them are doing it? Then what do you do? Does that open the door for another internet service provider to come in? Well, kind of, sort of. The problem with that is that the internet service providers usually have to get their pipe into your house from the phone company or the cable company. So they may not have the option. They may not be able to open it up. I'd like to hear from you. 8888-ASK-LEO. What do you think of this? We could talk about anything having to do with tech, too. Not just computers or the internet, but camcorders, MP3 players, PDAs, cell phones. Yeah, you bet. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's talk about it. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call's coming up next. Leo, that's the number.
Hello.
You ready to geek out? I am. Let's go to Hotlanta. And Jim, who's on the line, listens to the show via podcast. Hey, Jim, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
It's great to have you. Welcome.
I have got a problem that has us pulling our hair out and just absolutely frustrated right now. And I don't know, it's a little bit different than you sometimes discuss, but let me tell you what's going on.
Yeah, because I'll be glad to pull my hair out for you. Worst case scenario, I'll lose the hair.
You have a lot more than me. I don't have enough to pull out right
now. Not for long if you keep this up. All right, what can I do? Let's see.
Situation, about 3 or 4 years ago, we purchased or registered a domain name with one of those all-in-one kind of web host companies, registered a domain, and then they hosted our site for a small family-owned. And we did some research. They were pretty highly rated, and they've been pretty good about, and in the course of time, they have been either changed names or gobbled up or whatever.
Yeah, that's what happens these days with the small ones especially.
Yeah, well, now what's happened is that when we log on to our site, the domain, it shows a completely different site. It's one of those context link placeholders kind of thing.
Right.
Won't return our phone calls. I've gotten a couple of canned tech support messages saying everything looks like it's working fine.
Here's what you want to do. First, you want to do a who is to find out who really owns that domain.
Well, that's the problem. It shows us as the technical contact, but not the administrative or registrant.
And who shows up as the registrant and the administrative?
Company.
That company.
Authority that we can go to?
Yeah, there is. What's the name of the company, out of curiosity?
I think they're going by Web Hosting International or NIDA.com. Used to be one fast host, and they still have web pages for all three of those. And ironically, they're here in Atlanta, which we didn't know at the time. I rode over there, and it turns out their mailing address is a post office box in the shopping center mailbox company. You know,
it's very easy to set up a web hosting company without really any resources at all. One person can do it by just buying a server from a big company like SoftLayer, where I get my servers, and then parceling it out to 1,000 other people.
Sure.
And that's what they do. It's called shared hosting. And they don't have to do much at all. They collect the money.
Well, in our site, all the content is actually, we've migrated it over to another host, and all we're doing is redirecting. So it's not the content that is the concern. I mean, even if we had to recreate the site, at least we could do that. It's getting our domain back is the frustrating and sort of impossible thing, because it's on all the printed material and things like that.
This may be going too high, but it's certainly going to be effective. The organization responsible for this is called ICANN, ICANN.org.
Okay.
And they have a uniform domain name dispute resolution policy. They have a whole system for this. Essentially, what you're trying to do, I mean, unfortunately, it sounds like this company's asserting ownership to that name. So what you want to do is get it back from them.
Mm-hmm.
If they're the registrant, They're the owner of it, not you. So ICANN, every registrar is responsible to ICANN. ICANN gives them the power to register names. So it's like going to the big guy and saying, look, mm-hmm. I got a problem. Now, because it's the big guy, it may be a little difficult to get personal service from them. But they have a way of doing it if you go to ICANN.org.
Okay.
And then they also have a list of dispute resolution providers that may, well, see, I think this is worldwide. So that, ICANN is a U.S. organization, although they have worldwide power. I think the U.S. Department of Commerce kind of charters them. So I think you, go ahead.
Search, we also came up with ENOM, E-N-O-M, which I guess is the place that they registered it. Does that make sense?
Oh, okay, that's what you want.
Okay.
Oh, okay. That's what I was asking. You want to know who their registrar is.
Ah.
Much better. You can go to ENOM. If ENOM is the registrar, that's who you want to know. If ENOM is the registrar, you go to them and you say, whoa, you know, this company is not responsive. I own the domain. I'd like to control it. Please give me a login to my own account.
Okay.
So what happens is they went out and registered it on your behalf with ENOM. That's actually very good news. Because ENOM will be responsive. have you contacted them?
I have not.
Yeah, they're good. No, they're a big company.
I mean, if we can just get it unlocked, then we can move it to GoDaddy or someplace like that where I know it's a reputable place. And
well, ENOM's reputable. All you need to do is have access to it.
Okay.
So you
go
to ENOM and you say, hey, these people registered it in my name. I can't get a hold of them. Please give me control of this domain name. And you're right. You could then transfer it to somebody else, but there's no reason to transfer. ENOM's fine.
Great.
They're fine. I mean, I wouldn't. They're not somebody you transferred away from. That's what I was interested in: is who's the registrar, and that's who's really going to be controlling.
I just find in doing some web browsing on these people that name popped up, but I
Perfect.
Didn't know anything about them. So.
Yeah, they usually, and this is true of almost all of these smaller companies. They're not registrars. They will go through somebody else, and what you want to do is go up the chain to that person and say, "Hey, I want my name back," and they'll give it to you because you own it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
And we're coming back to the 90.
GoToMeeting Web Conferencing, everyone can see your computer desktop on their computer screen. It's changing the way we do business. Try it free for 30 days. Go to GoToMeeting.com. Click the orange Try It Free button. Use my name, Leo, as the promo code. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Love to hear from you. We're talking about all things technology. The show notes are online. I have a website to go with the show. It's at techguylabs.com. And you'll find there links to a couple of things. Our chat room, which is always a great, fun place to be. That's irc.dslextreme.com. And if you're an IRC user, the server is dslextreme.com, and the room is pound tech guy. But all of that's documented at irc.dslextreme.com. And if you don't have an IRC client, or if you've never used IRC before, the old style internet chat, it actually predates AOL. That's how old it is. So if you've never used that, you can just go to the page irc.dslextreme.com, and we have a little Java client. Makes it very easy. And you can type into the room. Somebody was confused by the Java client. At the bottom, there's a little text window. If you type something there, type hello.
Hello.
It'll show up in the chat room. And then they'll go, hello. We also have video of the show. I'm having a little trouble getting Ustream up and running, but I do have Stick'em video going. The Ustream audio is going. I'm just having trouble getting the video going on Ustream. Something with my computer. Oh, look, now everybody in the chat room is typing hello. Stop typing hello. anyway, links to both video feeds at the website, techguylabs.com. But the best way is to listen to this fine radio station and to call 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the best way to participate. Kelly is listening to the great KFI Los Angeles. She's in San Diego. Hey, Kelly, welcome. Hello, Kelly.
Wait, I don't have her.
Oh, did I push a bad button?
What line?
I just didn't push the right button. Let me push it again. Hi, Kelly.
Hi there.
Sorry about that.
Are you there?
I'm the tech guy, but I don't know how to use computers, so you'll have to bear with me for a moment. I am here. Hi, Kelly.
hi there. I'm a huge fan. I've tried for over a month to get into your, get through the phones here, and
wow.
I'm excited to finally be able to talk to you.
Thank you for trying so hard.
Well, I trust you, and I've tried every different cell phone out there, and I need a really good phone, and that does for talking, right?
Yeah.
That's the main thing. And then also for emails, lots of emails with attachments to push and receive them. And I am yet to find one. I've tried the BlackBerry 8700.
BlackBerry? You don't like the BlackBerry. Why? Because that would be my recommendation.
It's a good phone.
Oh, it isn't a good phone. You're right. The 8700 is a lousy phone.
And
I would try the new BlackBerry, the Curve. I believe that's a much better phone than the 8700 was, the 8800.
Okay.
But you're right. BlackBerries are not known for being great phones. They're great at email. I mean, they're the reason I would recommend a BlackBerry is because as far as the email goes, there's no better solution.
Okay.
But you say you want a good phone, and the phone is first and foremost the most important thing.
Correct. And even with the Palm Trio that I have, it keeps rebooting on itself.
Yeah, I have to say the Windows Mobile is not my favorite platform.
No.
It crashes. I guess that's because it's Windows. You don't really want a phone that crashes. I have to say, this is a negative.
It is.
I've had that happen on one of those Windows Mobile phones. You'll be trying to dial, and it'll lock up, or somebody's calling, and you're pushing the button, and nothing's happening. It drives you crazy. It's like, this is a phone. It should answer. If the computer doesn't work, it should answer. All right. So let's eliminate Windows Mobile from our list because it's all the same. I mean, it doesn't matter whose model you get. They all are basically the same Windows Mobile stuff. The
and
only
I
other choice really.
Palm Trio.
Yeah, it's Palm. You don't like that either, huh?
Windows. Well, I've had four of those. And
Kelly, you're hard on phones. Oh, my goodness.
And that was just this year. This is my fifth phone. And
you're worse than me.
I just want to find a really good one. And I heard that iPhone is still working out some of the bugs. And they're doing a new release in December with,
colors. Who's your carrier? By the way, there's no confirmed. This is purely rumor that they're going to do an iPhone in December. I think that they will not. I don't think there'll be any change in the iPhone for a while.
Oh, okay.
So you are AT&T. So yes. iPhone is an option for you. I think the iPhone, the iPhone is a very good phone, despite what Consumer Reports said. Consumer Reports, for reasons I don't understand, said it was not a very good phone, and it is actually. The phone quality is excellent on the iPhone,
and that's why I'm calling you.
Yeah, I like the iPhone.
I saw that as well.
Yeah, and I'll tell you where I'm getting my facts from is a really great a website called wirelessinfo.com. And they used a very sophisticated audio tester on the iPhone and said it's the best sounding phone they've ever used. Now, I have to say that the problem you're going to face, it does well with email if you're using Yahoo Mail or Google Mail. It doesn't do well with corporate exchange servers or BlackBerry servers. Where's your email coming from?
From a small office in Torrance.
Okay, so it's just but it's just a pop. It's just an ISP, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So probably what I would do with the iPhone is forward the mail that you want to read on your phone to Yahoo, create a Yahoo Mail account, free Yahoo Mail account, and do that. And it does the BlackBerry-style push mail with Yahoo Mail only, but it does a very good job with that. That means when a message comes into the mailbox, it automatically goes to the phone right away. You don't have to wait for it to check.
Perfect.
So that's good. Now, here's where you're not going to like it, the keyboard. And I think if you were considering an iPhone, and I'd be honest with you, I love the iPhone. I'm very happy with the iPhone, and I use it for email all the time. And it's actually not a bad email phone if you can live with the keyboard. Because it's a soft,
I like the QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah, but it's on a touch screen, and some people have more difficulty with that than others. So I would...
I have a touch screen, but it calls intermittently when I don't want it to, when it's like in my purse.
What kind of phone is that?
It has a hard time locking the Windows... mobile trio that
I have. No, the good iPhone does that very well. It locks well. I would look at that. I would go to an Apple store and I would play with the iPhone keyboard and see if you could live with that as a text input device. Because it's very good for email. So I wouldn't rule out the iPhone, except for price. It's very expensive. But in terms of an email device and a phone, it's actually very good. I think you should also try the BlackBerry Curve. I think they've done a better job with that.
Is there a wireless set that you recommend as well? Because I have the Motorola 8710.
My favorite is cheap. It's nice. It works well. It's the Plantronics Traveler, the 510.
Really?
It's $49, I think, and it's a very good Bluetooth headset, I think.
But it's very cheap.
Voyager. The Voyager 510. Yeah, they're $40, and that's a nice thing if you don't like it. I lost mine, but I didn't care because it was $40.
Yeah.
So that would be my recommendation for you, Kelly. I'll tell you what. Let me take some more recommendations from the chat room on phones. I think the BlackBerry is not a bad phone to try. The new one, the Curve. I don't. I'll have to ask the people in the chat room if they're happy with the Curve. Some people are saying that there are a couple of new Nokia phones like the E61, but you're not going to be able to get that from AT&T. And so what you have to do is get an unlocked E61. It's a smartphone. The E61i is a beautiful smartphone with a full keyboard on it. Looks a little bit like a Trio. I've played with them and I'm very impressed with it. But you have to buy it. It's going to be full price because it's not subsidized. It's not an AT&T phone. And you have to buy it unlocked and then take your SIM chip out of your existing phone. Now, see, this is one of the advantages you have, Kelly. One of the reasons you can try five phones is you can. You just pop the SIM chip out and you put it in the next one. That does not work with the iPhone. The iPhone has a unique SIM chip. A lot of recommendations from the chat room. Some people say they like the... See, Dak Man is saying I use two phones, one for email and one for phone. I'm not going to recommend that. I would try the iPhone and see if you can live with the keyboard. It's an excellent phone. I think it does a very good job with email, especially the Yahoo Mail. If you can live with the keyboard, trust me, there's no way Apple's going to update the iPhone until next year at the earliest. No way. They may do software updates to the existing iPhone, but people who haven't lived in the Apple rumor mill don't realize that when you read a rumor about something Apple's going to do, you can pretty much discount it entirely. These guys never get it right. Never get it right. Robert's on the line. Thank you, Kelly. I appreciate your call. Robert's on the line from New York, New York. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing just fabulously. I have a situation that you're probably the only one I can trust with this.
Oh, okay. Again,
laying it on you.
The burden is on my shoulders.
We actually spoke before. I have Wedding Podcast Network.
Oh, yeah. Great. Good to talk to you. Yep.
And we have a situation. We just decided to cover a wedding live via podcast.
Neat.
And actually be at the wedding and report on it for the network. And
oh, how
doing
fun.
A preliminary,
What a great idea.
Well, we're pioneers, and we like to push the envelope, and I think it'd be very exciting, and I know our listeners are really looking forward to it. But
so it's not a wedding that anybody that they know, but the idea is that every wedding is a wonderful. You could be a wedding crasher legally, basically.
Exactly. And we're going to be the ears of people who want to listen. But we did a preliminary interview with our couple. We're going to interview them before, during the wedding, and then after for our newlywed cast. But they asked how difficult it would be for us to actually put the podcast up live as we're recording it. And I've been exploring a bunch of different options on how to do this successfully, and I'm not totally comfortable with any of them.
Well, you know, how I'm streaming live video right now is through Ustream and Stick'Em, and both of those work pretty well.
Right, except that there was a problem earlier today, and it went down.
Well, yeah. I mean, Stick'Em's been very reliable. I'm trying to get Ustream to be more reliable. I think ultimately Ustream will be reliable. It's certainly reliable for audio.
Well, that's the thing. We're not really planning on doing video, because I think video is too unreliable.
Right.
In a critical situation where the window, if guests want to experience...
Well, how many people do you anticipate will be watching live or listening live?
Live, we believe, probably about 24.
Yeah, see, that's almost impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really tough to do.
So I think if we do just audio, and we're going to be blogging throughout the day, so we'll be posting photographs and video clips on the blog, we want to just do audio for now.
Let me think about this and get back to you, because we have to take a break right now. Now, hang on the line, though. Broadcasting live weddings. Let's talk about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about weddings. But with a tech angle. With a tech angle, I promise. Robert is on the line from New York City. He is the head honcho at the WeddingPodcastNetwork.com. Is that right? Oh, let me put you up here. WeddingPodcastNetwork.com. And... you want to stream. Now, there's some debate. Is it 24 or 2,000?
About 24.
Oh, 24's easy. I thought you said 2,000.
Well, hopefully we'll have many more than that. But
yeah,
that audio would be most reliable.
Yeah, it would be. And with 24, it's not too difficult to do. You could probably, what you'd have to figure out is what your users would expect. Because you could use Windows Media Producer. You could use QuickTime Server. You could use Shoutcast. But all of those require somewhat of a different way of receiving it.
Okay.
So you might ask your listeners, well, how would you like to? Would you like to have to use Windows Media Player? Would you like to use QuickTime? Would you like to use Winamp? How do you want to receive this?
Yeah. Well, you know, the problem is for the live stream of it, I think the people who will be listening to it will be those who are personally connected to the couple.
So they could almost dictate to them.
You know, and I want it to be easy as possible. Do you think TalkShoe might work?
Yeah, TalkShoe is probably a very good choice for you. We use TalkShoe for Net at Night. It's free streaming audio. You could actually have some fun with it because you could even take calls and stuff during the downtime.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, you could produce it like like Princess Di's wedding if you wanted to.
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
really.
Because we know that Grandma can't be there.
Yeah.
And she's in the Midwest, and the wedding is taking place in Philadelphia. And, you know, that might be nice that she could communicate with the bride and groom at some point, you know, and, you know, wish them congratulations.
She could call in.
Overall recorded experience.
Wouldn't that be neat?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's just that the reliability factor is critical here because we won't have a take two on this. We'll have one shot, and if the technology fails us,
well, let me put it this way. I mean, it's bleeding edge, whatever you're going to do. The technology is almost guaranteed to fail you at some point.
Wouldn't be much fun if we didn't, if it went smoothly, would it?
That's called, you know, you're on the bleeding edge. Let me think of what the most reliable way to do this would be. You know, you could do a Skype. You could do up to 99 people in a Skype cast.
You can.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was limited to five on a...
No, this is a little different. This is not a conference call, although Skype has removed that five-person limit. But you could do a Skype cast, which allows people to listen in but not necessarily say anything, and then you could pick the people who say things. So that, that would be another way to go, I think, that might, you know, Skype, except for this week, Skype has been very reliable.
Yeah, and you know what? Now that you're talking about it, the quality overall, I know when we do live interviews, you know, for the shows, Skype gives us the best quality recording.
Yeah. And the nice thing about Skype as opposed, the solutions of Skype and TalkShoe, Ustream, and Stick'Em are all great solutions because at the church, you probably don't have unlimited bandwidth, but you don't need unlimited bandwidth because you're not serving those 24 people directly. You're serving one stream to a centralized server, which then serves everybody else.
So they'll redistribute it.
Redistribute it. And that's a nice, that's certainly something, you know, certainly a requirement. I mean, the church is not going to have enough bandwidth probably even to serve 24 people reliably, let alone, right. You know, once you start doing this, unless you make it a private thing, you might get many, many more.
Yeah, we're not sure if we're going to open it to our base of listeners. It'll be up to the couple, but certainly we'll be recording it for our podcast, our bridal scene podcast that we'll have of the entire event.
Oh,
so.
I think this is a wonderful idea.
Well, I love this.
Yeah, I mean, everybody loves weddings, right? And to kind of be a fly on a wall, it's almost like HGTV or Discovery where they cover these live reality events.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the fun part about it, you know, we, you know, obviously we love the technology of podcasting and audio and theater of the mind. I think with enhancing the blog with photographs and text reports as well as the live podcast, I think it'll give people who aren't there a good sense of what the experience might have been like.
I like this idea. So Skype cast is one, TalkShoe's another. Both of those would work fine. Both of them would require a little effort on the other end. With the case of Skype, they'd have to download Skype to participate. TalkShoe is nice because you could send them a link they could click and they could just listen to streaming audio. It wouldn't be much different than listening to an internet radio station.
Right, and they don't. I don't think they have to register necessarily to listen to the stream.
Only to call in, not to listen.
Right.
I like TalkShoe for something like that. That's why we started using TalkShoe. We anticipated a large number of listeners, not participants, but listeners on the stream.
Right.
And that actually never happened, but they certainly have the capacity to do quite a few people.
Yeah, it'll be an exciting experiment for sure to see if we can actually pull it off.
But the thing I would underscore, Robert, and I would certainly, you know, it's tough with a wedding because this is a once in a lifetime thing, or maybe twice or three times in a lifetime, depending on who you are. But it's a special, special day. And what I would emphasize is that the technology is kind of icing on the cake, but it may not be reliable. I mean, you cannot guarantee that this is going to work.
Right.
You do as many tests as you can. And gosh knows, I push technology to the limit all the time. And, you know, you can rehearse. But the day of the wedding, who knows? Skype could go down.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that?
You know, that'll be kind of the bonus for the bride and groom if we can provide that. But, you know, certainly they'll have a recording of it for posterity.
Right.
And their family members theoretically can get it within hours of us recording it. So even if it were just delayed a few hours and then distributed to them, you know, they'd be able to enjoy that as well.
I think that's a great way to go.
Yeah, thanks. Now, are you going to be out at the podcast and New Media Expo?
I am not this year because I have to do the radio show. It's inconvenient for me to get to PME. That's the kind of the gathering of the podcast tribes. I'm going to another event called Blog World and New Media Expo in Vegas, November 8th and 7th or 8th, 8th and 9th, something like that. Blogworld.com. That one I'm going to go to, but unfortunately, I'm going to miss the PME, the podcast expo. We broadcast from there a couple of years ago. But I'm not, I think I'm going to be working. I'm sorry to say I'm going to be doing I'm going to be doing the radio show, so I won't be able to go there. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back in just a bit, talk to Russ. He wants to get LoJack for his daughter's laptop. We'll talk about that and more as the Tech Guy continues. Leo LaPorte. We'll be right back. very good geek day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. I'm the geek, so you don't have to be. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. I'd love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about, anything on your mind having to do with tech, that's what I'm here for. 8888-ASK-LEO. And we have a chat room, irc.dslextreme.com. 405 people in there. We have a video stream. You stream. I just haven't. Apparently, I can't get two video streams coming out of this studio at the same time. So I'm going to stick with Stick'Em for now. You can watch that by going to stick'em.com or to my website, twit.tv/live. And you'll see that. Happy 25th birthday to the compact disc on Friday. It was August 17th, 1982, the very first CD rolled off the production lines at Philips. It was a joint venture between Philips and Sony. Philips did the hardware. Sony did the firmware, the software. There's some debate over what the first CD made was. Many reports said it was an ABBA CD, an ABBA album called The Visitors. And I think Philips was a little embarrassed by that notion because their press release said it was a Richard Strauss classical composition. They probably didn't want to, they didn't want to go down in history as the first CD was ABBA. Here we are 25 years later. The CD is still the dominant form of music distribution, but losing ground rapidly to online distribution. In fact, the peak for CDs was in 2001. Over 700 million CDs sold in the U.S. in 2001. It's down now about 20%. 5.5 million. That's a pretty big drop. I'm sorry, 550 million, not 5.5 million, that would be a big drop. 550 million. From 700 some million. And I think this is going to continue, don't you? I think online is now replacing CD. Unfortunately, in some ways. I read an excellent article in the San Francisco Chronicle by Joel Selvin. I just thought this was fascinating. I'll put a link in the show notes. You can read it on the sfgate.com. His point was that digital means lower quality. Now, CDs already are lower quality. They're not compressed, but in order to make something digital so that it will work on a CD, you have to slice it up into very thin slices, and you have to measure it with relatively few bits. So you're never, it's not a perfect reproduction. It's good enough is the idea, right? And there's still a debate between people whether the analog vinyl album is better than the CD, the digital CD. It's true that the analog album does retain more of the information because it's analog, but it also has many flaws. I mean, scratches and skips and hisses and pops and clicks. A perfect vinyl record would be preferable or more accurate than a CD. I don't know. You know, remember, you got to play it through a stereo. The speakers aren't perfect. The truth is, live music is a whole nother matter. It's always better. In any event, that's not the issue because we're not even listening to CD quality anymore. If you listen to downloaded music, it's much lower quality, highly compressed. A lot of information's taken out of it. And that's the point that many producers are making right now. Selvin quotes an engineer named Al Schmidt, who's a 15 Grammy Award winner. He says, "We're pretty happy with what we send out, the recordings we make. What happens after that? Can't control." Phil Ramone, the famous producer, says it's painful when he hears MP3s. It's painful. They can hear the difference. And it's true. If you know how an MP3 works, it's kind of taking advantage of the way the brain works. I interviewed the creator of the MP3 some years ago, and he explained it very clearly. He said, if it's German guy from Fraunhofer, Karl Heinz, he said to me, "If you look at the way the ear works, when certain frequencies are played, the ear tunes out other frequencies. Harmonic frequencies are gone. You don't hear them." And that's the way MP3 works. It says, well, when I hear this frequency, I know that those sideband frequencies are inaudible. The ear just stops listening. So I can take those out. I don't need them. Well, you know, it's the same thing as a movie. When you look at a movie, you're only seeing 24 frames per second, but the eye, persistence of vision, mushes it together to make it look like actual motion. I thought this was very interesting. Joel interviewed a specialist in brain physiology, Dr. Robert Sweeto, who's head of the University of California, San Francisco Audiology Department. He said this poor fidelity music stimulates the brain in different ways. The brain actually has to work harder to reassemble MP3s. It has to turn it into music. He says any compression system is based on the idea you could throw data away, and that's proved tricky because we don't know how the brain works. Sweeto says that, in fact, because the brain's working harder, it may not get the same emotional value out of music that you would out of listening to higher quality music or, better yet, live music. Bottom line, live music will move you more, will touch your emotions more than digital music. Do you think that's true? If it is, that's scary because we're moving towards this lower quality digital music, this highly compressed 128 kilobit digital music. I'll be honest with you, I can't tell the difference. Maybe 120, I could tell the difference between 128 kilobit and a CD. And I know this because I actually went into the Dolby Labs, into their very high quality audio reference room, and they did an A-B comparison for me. They played a Steely Dan CD and then played different levels of MP3 compression. And by the time it got to 192 kilobits, normally you do it at 128. When you buy on iTunes, unless you buy the high quality, it's 128. I could hear the difference. I could tell every time. That's the CD, that's 128 kilobits. By the time it got to 192, I couldn't tell the difference. Now, was I equally moved? I didn't check my pulse rate or my heart. I don't know. But it kind of makes sense. I mean, when you're at a live concert, you get a different experience, don't you? Especially a live acoustic concert where you're hearing the real music, not amplified, but the real music. When you sit next to a musician, isn't it more moving than when you hear it on your MP3 player? Seems to me it is. I'll never forget sitting in a studio with Richie Havens doing All Along the Watchtower live, and it just moved me in a way that listening to the recording never did. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk about that. Any, you know, that's tech too. That's tech too. And I think that we're kind of getting used to, and this may be a bad thing, a lower quality of music. And maybe my kids and their generation are never going to have that same experience or that we had when we were putting on the headphones and listening to the vinyl recording, or better yet, in the concert hall, hearing the music. You ever been to a symphony or hear a symphony orchestra play? It definitely causes different feelings. I mean, I think there might be something to this. It's a really great article. I will put a link to this Joel Selvin article from sfgate.com. He's a really great music critic in the show notes. You can read it for yourself. The nice thing about a symphony, of course, when you hear a symphony is it's not amplified. You're hearing the actual music. Even when you go to a rock concert, you're not hearing the actual music. You're hearing it highly amplified, right? So I don't know if it has the same impact. It's still better quality. It's still analog. It's still better quality than the digital. It's very interesting. These are the fascinating questions that technology raises. Russ is on the line from Greensboro, North Carolina. Thanks for hanging on, Russ. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
How are you?
Hey, I enjoy all your podcasts. I just wanted to ask you about the LoJack software for laptops. Have you experienced that or heard any stories concerning the LoJack? My daughter's starting college next week, and I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm taking all the precautions, you know, because of laptop theft.
Yeah, it's actually not really LoJack. It's from a company called CompuTrace that licensed the LoJack name. Same idea. It's $50 a year. They put some software on the computer that phones home that can be used to trace the laptop. I've reviewed it. I've looked at it. It does what it says it will do. Here's the question: does it actually help the laptop get recovered? I don't know. They You know, that's what they have, you know, on the front page at LoJackForLaptops.com, they have success stories. But the real I'd like to see statistics of the LoJacked laptops that have been stolen. How many have been recovered? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
I went to the website, and like you said, they have plenty of testimonials.
But that's anecdotal, right? I mean, it could be 1,000 were stolen and 5 came back. Those 5 people are happy. And look, at that price, I think it's probably worth doing. And we've talked about this before. When a laptop goes to college, it is just, it's ready to get stolen, right?
Right.
And what I would suggest you do is not only get that, but get a lock for the laptop.
Right. Yeah, we've done that already.
And then just tell your daughter, or your son, your daughter, I guess, you know, don't leave the laptop lying around. You're in the library using it. Take it with you when you go to the bathroom. Don't leave it lying around.
Right. Only take a second.
It's so easy to walk out with. But I think if she treats that like precious cargo, which it is, I think it's probably safe.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate it, Leo. Thanks. Enjoy
Russ,
your afternoon.
Great to talk to you. Thanks a lot for calling. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. 8888 Ask Leo. Also, our gadget guru, Ron Rosberg, in just a second. You stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk about it. One thing I want to tell you about LoJacking a laptop is, it you know, if somebody is determined, is a clever and a sophisticated laptop theft thief, that's not going to stop them. They just take the hard drive out, format the darn thing, and boom, they're golden. So it probably is a good idea if you have private data on it to encrypt it. We hear this all the time. Every government agency, it happened to the British Secret Service, they lose the laptops, they leave them in a cab, and then all of a sudden all this, you know, the social security numbers or what, all this secret information is out there. You know, it seems to happen all the time. And it's very simple. Both Windows and Macintosh have built-in ways to encrypt data, and I would suggest using those. If you've got stuff on there that you don't want people to get. Jose in Victorville, California. Hey, Jose. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
Very well. What's up?
Hi. I've been having some trouble getting my PlayStation 3 online. It will access my router and get an IP address, but whenever it tries to get a DNS, it fails.
Hmm.
I was wondering if you have any tips for that.
I don't have any experience getting a PS3 online. So it's not getting. It sounds like it's not getting a. The DHCP is not working. Does the PS3 give you settings for this kind of thing?
Yeah, you can manually keys and DNS addresses and all that. But I haven't been able to get it to work.
I would suggest using the automatic, unless you've configured a router in some odd way.
That's the weird thing. I can't really configure my router because I have it set up kind of weird. I have a internet access is through a Sprint broadband card.
I see.
I bridged to my network adapter and plugged that into my modem port of my router. Now, it worked for a while, and I was able to download a couple game demos and videos and things, and it worked. Then one day I restarted my computer, and it's not working now.
Yeah, I mean, that's an oddball setup. I understand what you're doing. Do you have any other wireless devices on that router?
I also have the Nintendo Wii.
And they're working?
Yes, they were working, but they're not working now.
So everything stopped working at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we know it's not the PS3 now. We know that it's something wrong with the router configuration. If none of the wireless stuff is working, then it's obviously something wrong with all of it.
All right.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. It's hard for me to say. You have such an oddball setup. I understand why you're doing it. So he's using one of those wireless Evdo cards. But the problem is you can buy a router that will support these PC cards for the high speed, if through 3G, but I mean, that's, I think it's like $300. It's very expensive. So, and he doesn't want to do that. So he's using a standard router. He's got the high speed wireless in a PC, and then he's sharing the internet over the PC through the router. Oh man, I mean, there's so many places in that chain that could fail. I'm afraid I won't be much help to you. I just, you know, it's one of those things you'd have to sit down and go through step by step every single piece in the equation. I could think of a bunch of ways that could fail. First, make sure you've got the security software on the PC turned off. Make sure you've got internet connection sharing properly set up. The fact that all of your wireless devices have stopped working is a bad sign. Are you using security if you're using WEP? Or you can't use WPA with the Nintendo, right? I think you have to use WEP. I would turn off wireless security temporarily, at least, to see if that's problematic. Troubleshoot it is the best you can do, and I'm afraid that's all I can suggest. Paul in Upland, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Paul.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
Excellent. How are you?
Well, I need some help. I keep losing my cable internet connection. I've had Time Warner out about 11 times. They've run new lines and an amplifier, and I have a very strong connection. So, you know, when I'm on, it's rocket fast, but it'll drop in 10 minutes, or it might be good for 5 hours. All I have to do is release and renew the IP address, and I'm back up and running.
Okay. So have you tried it without the router?
I have tried it without the router. Same thing.
It's the same thing. Okay, now this is the key here. If it's happening without the router, then we can eliminate the router from the list of problems. So it sounds to me like, yeah, it's either the modem is bad or it's a DOCSIS modem almost undoubtedly, which means it gets its settings, it gets its setup from the cable company.
Yeah, automatically.
DHCP. Yeah.
And they're on their way out again Tuesday to look into a bad tap, which
could be that. Could be that. All of that's you know, out at your curb. It's not in the connection into the house. It's not at the modem. It's not anything you could do anything about either.
Yeah, I mean,
you've gone through two modems and it's still happening, it's not the modem either. Now, release and renew does. Well, it depends. If you're on a router, the release and renew says to the router, give me a new IP address. If you're directly connected to the modem, then it's saying to the cable company, give me a new IP address.
Right.
So
it has to be something on their end.
It has to be. If you've eliminated all, you know, you've tried new modems, you've eliminated the router. See, the router can be the problem. And this is a very common problem with those routers because, you know, the bad firmware or a flaky router. And often resetting the router or release and renew will work. But you've eliminated the router. You've eliminated the modem.
Yeah, I've read a lot about that, you know, in different forums. So, yeah, I eliminated the router and then...
Have you tried it with different computers?
No.
That's the one common point, right, is that could be your fault. Is the computer, it could be a bad network interface card, could be the settings in the interface card. So that might be something to look at. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Unlimited local and long-distance calling for less than $20 a month. Call 888-60-POWER. That's 888-60-POWER. Leo Laporte here. The tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO is the number. We're going to get back to the phones in a bit. But first, let's go up to Clear Lake, California, where the sun always shines and all the children are above average. And Ron Rosberg, who is our gadget guru. Hello, Ron.
Hi, Leo, and hi, everybody out there in Radio Land.
Well, you have a good connection from Clear Lake. It sounds great.
Yeah, and this, by the way, this is Skype. How about that, huh?
Skype works really well if you give it enough bandwidth. That's the key.
Yeah, no, I got a set. Yeah, I had the Hughes dish up here for the last 3 or 4 years, which is about a 700 download and about a, you know, 300 or upload, but now I got Mediacom up here, and it's 7 download. Unbelievable. And then I think 450 upload.
Yes, and satellite doesn't work well with Skype. There's too much latency. So this is great. This sounds really good. Right. So we got 3 gadgets. We better get to work here.
All right. And first one, by the way, I had several of our listeners. By the way, do you know if KFI is streaming today, or is there a problem?
I haven't heard of a problem. I think that they are.
Well, I tried it on the computer. I couldn't get through. If there's anybody in the chat, I'd like to know. And then also, the first item I want to talk about is Roku Labs, Palo Alto company. They've been making these radio bridges which are really kind of neat, Leo, because I was looking for an easy way up here at Clear Lake to be able to listen to, you know, your show and any internet stream. Now, of course, you can go on a PC. That's easy. But I wanted something with a nice speaker on it and stuff. And Roku Labs has this R1000. It's a tabletop radio. It's got the speaker coming up the top. It's got, I think, about 18 presets on it. And what is so cool about this, Leo, is that when you go to your computer and you type in on Roku Radio, which they just introduced this website called Roku, R-O-K-U, radio.com, it has a place in here where you just put in any station you want, and it then asks you, just, you know, as soon as I do it, any station, it comes up within seconds, like 1 or 2 seconds. For example, I put KGO in, and up comes KGO, gives you anything.
So wait a minute, you're putting this in on the website, but then it somehow programs your radio?
Leo, that's it's because I was looking for something real. Now, because all I do is you put in a station, and then when you do that, it then asks you if you want to play it on your PC or you want to transfer it to your radio, Roku radio, your bridge radio, and it does it. Within seconds, it's playing through the radio. Then it has another link.
Let me just to paint this picture for people. This thing is like a desktop radio.
Radio. It's roughly, Leo, it is, I would say, about 10 inches wide. But and it goes deep. And yeah, and then it's just the regular.
Does it, does it get AM and FM, too? Or
yes, it gets AM and FM.
And?
AM, FM. Yes, and
internet radio.
Internet radio. So all I do is you press the button and you say what preset you want. And for example, all I do is I press number 1 gives me or press number 3 or you know any of the buttons up on top, and it automatically will play whatever you put
now,
in there. And
do you have to have Wi-Fi for this?
Yes. It runs automatically on Wi-Fi. Now, I have to tell you one thing I'm going to scream at Roku about, which I'm a little disappointed in. I forgot my remote control because you're supposed to use your remote control to help program this thing the first time or whatever. But I had this set up at my office at home, and it was my Netgear router. Found the Netgear router in seconds, and it was beautiful. It did everything I wanted to do. And I brought it up here to Clear Lake. Well, I don't have a Netgear router. I have a Buffalo router that I'll be talking about soon about it. Supposed to give me a little more range and stuff like that, and it kept looking for the Netgear radio. I mean, the Netgear Wi-Fi. Well,
right.
You know what I had to do, Leo? I had to go in and change the SSID of my Buffalo to be call it a Netgear.
To match it.
yeah. And then once I did that, it was fine. And so,
does it work with encryption like WPA and WEP? I mean, if you have an encrypted stream, it must have a way of entering the password.
Yes. And by the way, you can go in and tell it to manually set everything.
Okay.
So it's got they've thought about that. The one thing I'd love to see them do is if you forgot your remote control, not that you're going to move this all over the place because it's not a lightweight radio. It probably weighs 5 or 6 pounds. It's a well built radio. It's got a beautiful scrolling LCD, blue screen on. It gives you the time, and of course, it gets the time from the internet. So you always have a beautiful time set on it. But it's so easy to preset any of your stations. They have 4,000 streaming stations in their library. So
it looks like it works with most formats: the Windows Media, the Shoutcast, almost all the different kinds of internet radio stations too. Yeah. Which is nice.
So if you're having a tough time, let's say listening, to Leo,
you could hear me everywhere in the country. It'd be easy.
Yeah, it's $299. They just reduced the price, Leo. If you go to Amazon, unfortunately, Amazon doesn't have the new price on it. Roku Radio.com or RokuLabs.com has the $299. They just reduced it $100 from $399 to $299.
The SoundBridge Radio R1000.
Yeah, and you'll see it when you come up here. I want you to see it.
I'll play with it. That's great.
Yeah, it is really a cool product. So highly recommend that. The next item I want to talk about is. And I want to preface this first because I've been doing a lot of headsets, Bluetooth headsets lately, and I want to tell our audience why, Leo, is that July 1st of 2008, you no longer will be able to hold your telephone to your ear while you're driving.
Not in California, anyway.
California, yes. Okay,
and once California, we're all over the world now, Ron, so it's different rules in different states.
But I will tell you, Leo, once California does something, you watch the other states.
So goes the nation. Know? Actually, there are many states now. I think
New York
states.
Is the same way, too.
Yep, Washington State. Yeah. There are a lot of states.
And by the way, I've been selling mobile telephones since 1970, not cellular. But I will tell you, Leo, I don't think anyone knows what kind, in the long run, holding a phone to your head what it's going to do. You know, maybe 10 years from now, we'll all have the answers. But I highly recommend...
Brain cancer, you mean?
well, there, you know, there have been some reports on that, and I'm not...
I don't think so. I have a pretty high faith in the FCC.
You don't want me to spread the rumor on the iPhone?
Let's not spread that rumor.
No. But I'll be the
first to go. I walk around with this thing glued to my head. And a Bluetooth is a radio, so it's not necessarily going to make it any better.
Well, it's a lot lower, smaller power. Remember that. It's a lot smaller power. But you know, I'm even also advocating using a wired one. Okay, I don't care what you do. I still think you should just have the phone away from your head. That's what I do. I think it's much easier, especially when you're driving. You're going to have to do that July 1st. So got a hold of, remember the Blue Ant that you like, the speakerphone?
Love that Blue Ant. Yeah.
Well, the Blue Ant just came out with a very lightweight. I think it's 3.3 ounces, Leo. It's about one of the lightest headsets that I've found. Nice looking piece. And it retails for $99 and Bluetooth, and it interfaces with almost all the cell phones out there. And I've been very pleased with the quality. So it's not as much talk as I like 8 to 10 hours talk because I'm on the phone all day long, but it's 5 hours of talk on it. So it's called the Bluetooth Z9. And so if you're looking for a very comfortable, I could wear this one all day long. It's so lightweight. It's about the lightest weight that I've found. And you also can move it from ear to ear if you want during the day. So it's the Z9 Blue Ant. So that's my second product of the day. And my third one, Leo.
There's more?
Yeah, more. I tell you, you know, that at 12:30, your listeners get a real education on gadgets. There's no doubt about it, okay? The last that I want to talk about, because children and young adults and even older adults are going back to school, college, starting this week, next week, and right after Labor Day.
Yep.
And I came across a site. This was, I believe, a demo, one of my favorite shows that Chris Shipley puts on. In fact, they just had a real nice party down at Palo Alto with 500 people last week. But SiteSpeed is a great video product. Now, listen to this. You and I, if we have video cameras from our portables or whatever, we could talk to each other. And by the way, no charge on this. Absolutely free. And, Leo, they have
probably... So this
probably
is kind of like a Skype.
Yeah. In fact, actually, they're really trying to get a hold of Skype users right now and say, talk to us. We won't go down. And that's kind of how they sent this thing out.
Uh-huh.
But also, the back-to-school thought here right now is the video, when you wave your hand, it's probably the fastest video that I've seen. I think it's 30 frames per second or whatever, but it's great video. They also have, for $4.95 or $49 a year, $4.95 a month, or $49 a year, they have the professional. And by the way, they're willing to give any Skype user that 30 days professional. Now, what you do on the professional, Leo, let's say you and I want to have all your Twit people, that are not in the studio, all on camera, so you can have each one of them appear. You could do multi-channels on
it. Now, how well does that work? Because I've tried this before.
Leo, I suggest you try it, because I will tell you, I did three people. That's, you know what, and it was great. And it also puts, besides having the person's picture on the screen, it gives you a little tiny picture of your picture on it, okay?
Yeah.
And, oh, you know what is also great about it, Leo? Even in the free version, you could record it. So if you and I are recording, you know, what it does, it identifies immediately on their chat feature. So it comes up on chat and says the record button, this is being recorded. So you're not going to be able to sneak.
Because that's one problem with Skype. You can record, but you don't get all the parties. You don't get yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure on the multi-channel, but I tried it on one-on-one, but you and I could try it later on, and I'll show you.
That's
up here,
another
but,
feature you have to pay for, by the way. That's not a free feature.
The multi one is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the record will work, Leo, in the free version, I believe. Okay. And
call recording, it says requires.
It requires $4.95. Yeah, but $4.95 or $49 a year is inexpensive enough. But if you just want to talk to your kids one-on-one and have some great video, take a look at SiteSpeed. It's free, as I say, for one-on-one, and you could get that 30 days test on the professional version if you'd like.
I'll have to give it a shot. That looks pretty good. SiteSpeed.com, SiteSpeed.
You could spell it also. They're smart enough, and they got SITE.
Oh, they do? Because, I think that the world is learning. Nobody spells sight or night right anymore, you know? They all spell it SITE and SNITE. SiteSpeed.com. Spell it right or wrong, you'll still get to the same place. Very good, Ron. I'm going to come up to Clear Lake and visit you, and Ron, is it too late to go up there? It's a Labor Day
reservations. No, I've got I got some Labor Day. If you want to, I've got 3-day packages for Labor Day starting Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If you want to be right on the water, our website is www.clearlake.org.
We'll give you a
plug.
Appreciate it.
And
you're going to be up there with the boat, right? So Henry,
I'll be up there with the boat, and I'm going to do I'll be doing my show here live from the lake on that Sunday before Labor Day also.
Good, because you sound much better here than you do at home.
Well, I plan to, in fact, what I was just doing moments ago is I had a builder come out here. I'm talking about actually getting out of the resort business and just putting up a nice house on the property.
Build You'll a castle there, like a Hearst castle. We call it Rosberg Castle.
Once you see it, Leo, you're going to want to do all your podcasts.
I might. We'll just do the Gadget Castle. We'll make it the new Tech Guy Castle.
I need that for all the crap I got
there. Ron anyway. Rosberg, thank you so much. We'll talk again next week. He's the gadget guru. And thanks to him, Henry and I, we're going to go up there for Henry's 13th birthday right after the show. I can't wait. More of your calls to come. I am Leo Laporte,
the Tech Guy.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about tech and gadgets and cell phones and home theater and all that stuff. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number. 8888 Ask Leo. Love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about, you let me know at 888-827-5536. Aaron is on the line from Costa Mesa, California. Hi, Aaron. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I recently received a training computer, mm-hmm. a Dell GX 260, mm-hmm. from an office that closed down. The computer was basically brand new. It had XP Service Pack 2, and it has two hard drives, but one of the hard drives, basically the main hard drive, has two volumes, two partitions.
Right.
One of them is the system volume, which is a C drive, and the other one is just another volume that is blank with nothing on it. It's just called Ghost. I went to the administrative tools, computer management, and then I selected disk management. Mm-hmm. That basically shows all the volumes and partitions.
Right.
And it shows, and I went ahead and deleted the second volume. And so now it just shows 19 gigabytes of the C volume, and it shows another 19 gigabytes of unallocated space.
Right.
And basically I want to take the C volume and so that it takes up the entire hard drive, like to extend it.
Right.
So
that's something Windows can't do by itself. The only kind of partitioning Windows can do is destructive. It erases everything, and then you could do it. But if you want to preserve the existing drive on there and you want to merge those two partitions, you need what's called a non-destructive partitioner. Now, a couple that you can, the one I usually recommend is a commercial product called Partition Magic. And,
okay.
And that's one I absolutely swear by. But you may not want to spend the money on that. Because
right.
I think it's $80, something like that, 80 or 90 bucks. But it's really, really good.
All right.
But if you feel ambitious, you don't mind taking some chances, I would absolutely recommend backing up all your data just in case. Even with Partition Magic, you should. Back up that C partition, that primary partition. But there is a free program. It's based on Linux called GPartEd.
Okay.
And what you'll be doing is downloading and making a Linux boot CD because it won't run in Windows. You'll actually have to... They have a live CD version. They even have a live USB version, but you have to be able to boot from a USB drive to use it.
Okay.
And then you make... So you're following me so far. You'll make a live CD. You'll boot to it. And then GPartEd, usually, in most cases, will be able to merge those partitions. In other words, take the two and make one out of them.
Okay.
But I have to tell you, this is open source software. It works. It's a little risky. I would back up before you use it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll always back up.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I've had I've done this a million times without any problem with Partition Magic, the commercial program.
Okay.
I don't have as much experience with GPartEd, so I just would recommend being a little careful if you use it. Okay? It's gparted.sourceforge.net.
Okay.
All right, Aaron? Hey,
okay.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. And I imagine there are some other... partitions out there, partition managers out there that are free. If anybody has any other suggestions, I'd like to hear. I absolutely trust Partition Magic. I don't have enough experience with GParted to trust it, but I've talked to a lot of people who say that it works fine, no problem. There are some situations where you may not be able to do that. If it's, it sounds like what happened is that the people who made that, put that machine together, were using that extra partition to save ghost images of the primary drive. That's why it was called ghost. They were disk images. So it's probably just a normal partition. If it's a Windows dynamic partition, there are some oddball things it could be that you may not be able to do the merging. And Take It Two is telling me, he's an IT guy, is telling me in the chat room that you might, this might, I don't think it will, but he says it might trigger a reactivation with Microsoft. So make sure if you do that, that you have all of the serial number and all that information. I'm sure you do. I'm sure that when they gave you that computer, they gave you all that information. Carl's listening in Richmond, British Columbia, Vancouver area. Hello, Carl.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. I'm wondering, do you know of a Linux-based distro that can do like a DVD jukebox?
No. And I'll tell you why not. Because playback of DVDs, commercial DVDs, requires a license. This is, in fact, why DCSS was written, the program to crack DVDs, because there was no way to play back DVDs on Linux. And until they crack them, you can't. Now, if you're willing to crack it, of course, you know, if you take off the copy protection, yes. But it sounds like, do you want to run a hardware DVD jukebox, or do you want to digitize the DVDs and put them on a hard drive?
I want to digitize the DVDs.
Okay. Okay. So then you'll be ripping them.
Yeah. And I know how to do it manually from Linux, but I kind of want like an automated solution so I can have it like a media center.
Yeah. For playback.
Yeah. And I want to like keep all the extras in the menus.
I don't know off the top of my head what you would use for that, but I bet you will find somebody who does. Maybe somebody in the chat room. You know, there's 458 people in the chat room right now. Somebody must know that. Or somebody who's listening who can call in.
Yeah. I'm in the chat room. Now, actually.
Oh, okay. A DVD jukebox program. It wouldn't be playing really DVDs, though. It would really be a movie player jukebox.
Yeah, it would basically basically get the images of each DVD I put in there.
And right. Then it would mount it. Yeah, you're not looking for the ripping capability. You know how to do that. You're looking for a way to kind of maintain them and play them back in a convenient format.
Yeah, probably like showing cover art too. And I know you can do this with commercial solutions like Kaleidoscape, but they're $20,000 to $30,000 each.
Yeah, but of course that's a hardware device, right?
Yeah.
I would look at Songbird. I bet it does video. Songbird's very cool. It's kind of supposed to, it's kind of like an iTunes type player for. Actually, it's now I think Windows, Mac, and Linux, but they have definitely Linux. I'm trying to think of what other tools are commonly used for this kind of thing. We'll have to see if we can find something. So you've already got them ripped. You're not talking about taking the copy protection off. You've got files on the drive. You just want a great way, a great looking way, kind of a media player to play back these movies.
Because I've created the ISOs,
right?
And I can mount them using like Daemon tools or like program on
right.
that,
right? But how do we? That's not a big issue. It's just how do we play them back? And we want a good looking GUI too. Let's look. We'll see if we can find it. More to come in just a bit. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Very good day to you now, Leo Laporte, and we're ready to geek out. I am the tech guy. This is the show where we talk about tech. But now we do it in plain English. We make it easy to understand. I'm not here to show off. I'm not here to make you feel like you don't get it. I'm of the opinion everybody can get it, and I think everybody should understand technology. Even if you're not going to get a computer or a cell phone or a camcorder or a home theater, you probably should understand what's going on in all of this, because Well, we're in interesting times. Things are changing. And everything, home, work, play, church, school, it's all changing thanks to technology. And this is what this show is about. What it is, how it's changing, and what it means. If you'd like to ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion, the phone number is 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Our photo expert, Chris Marquardt, is coming up in just a little bit with another assignment, another photo assignment. We also, I have other things to talk about, but let's get back to the phones. Frankly, I'd like to hear what you have on your mind. Romeo's in Stockton, California. Hey, Romeo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, thanks for calling my call, DM.
Sure, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I have a question regarding, I'm about to build my the computer, and I'm considering getting a Windows XP OEM version.
Okay.
And I would like to find out the advantage and disadvantage of it.
The only advantage is it's cheaper.
Oh, okay.
The disadvantage is sometimes people have trouble with the OEM versions. The idea of an OEM version, first of all, OEM stands for Original Equipment Manufacturer, and it's a confusing term. What it really means, an OEM is somebody who makes computers, a computer manufacturer. So Dell is an OEM. HP is an OEM. And the little guy down the in the shop down the street who builds computers and sells them, he's an OEM. So the OEM version of Windows was never intended to be sold standalone. And in fact, the people who sell them usually use a loophole. If you go to Newegg.com, for instance, they sell a lot of OEM versions of Windows. They'll make you buy a little bit of hardware to prove that you're building, you know, you're a computer builder. And the reason this can be an issue sometimes is sometimes activation becomes a problem with this. And I know, I'll tell you, one guy who has had problems is Paul Thurrott, who does the Windows Weekly podcast with me on my podcast network. Now, he's a well-known Windows journalist, and he's built a lot of computers. He bought a copy, an OEM copy of Windows Media Center. And for a long time, that's the only way you could get Media Center. And tried to activate it. It activated fine initially, but Windows Genuine Advantage, for some reason, had a problem with it. And he called Microsoft, and Microsoft said, well, yeah, that's an OEM version. It's not a legitimate version. On the other hand, I know millions of people have bought OEM versions and are fine with it. You'll see it's a lot less expensive than the retail version of Windows. So I'd say go ahead, as long as you get it from a reputable retailer. The risk is if you get it from somebody who has used it or stripped it out of a PC that was sold, because then it might already be activated.
Okay.
So if you get it from somebody like Newegg, you're fine. If you get it at a computer swap meet, you might have a little more issues.
Right. Well, later on down the line, if I decide to upgrade to a newer processor, a newer motherboard, will that be an issue also?
Or? No, not at all. Then you call Microsoft. I mean, then you will have an reactivation request because that's the whole. I hate this, by the way. This anti-piracy stuff drives me nuts. Microsoft's okay. So paranoid about this. But what will happen is when there is a massive wholesale change of hardware, Windows says, whoa, wait a minute. You're installing it on a second machine. No. And then you have to call Microsoft and say, no, I'm not. I completely upgraded my machine, and they'll give you a number.
Sounds good. All right.
But I'd be very, I just mainly with OEM, just be careful where you get it, because here's the theoretical issue. Let's say there's a Mr. Bad Guy computer reseller. He had, you know, buys 20 computers from Dell with the disks in them, right? Takes the disks out, sells the computer. Somebody buys a computer. Oh, you don't need the disk. Windows is on there. Oh, okay. Take it home, install. And many times this has happened. You run it, activate Windows. Okay, great. They're going along fine. You get the disk that he stripped out of it. Now, that particular serial number's already been activated by the guy who bought the hardware. You're out of luck. Or worse, and this has happened sometimes too, if you get the disk before the guy gets the hardware, you activate it, and the guy who buys the hardware is out of luck. That's even worse. And this is why Microsoft, A, doesn't like to include disks with the computer. They actually give OEMs a break. Windows is cheaper if you don't include an install disk. That's why. And all of this paranoia does one thing and one thing only. Does it slow down pirates? No. No. Does it save Microsoft money? No. What does it do? Show of hands. Paying attention, you know, the only thing anti-piracy techniques like this The only thing they do is they bother legal, legitimate users. Those are the only people impeded by it. Yeah, does it stop a little casual piracy, like a guy says, well, I have three computers, I'll install the same version of Windows on all three? Maybe, and I think that's where Microsoft's targeting. It doesn't stop the guy who is selling copies of Windows on a blanket. It doesn't stop, and this is the big piracy problem, the Asian pirates who are making virtual, you know, boxed versions of Windows and selling them. It doesn't stop them. It stops a little casual piracy, and I would submit that it doesn't save Microsoft money. You know, they came back with some results from the Windows Genuine Advantage. I can't remember what the number was. Was it 2%, 3%, 5%? Some large number of you, legitimate legal users of Windows were getting flagged as pirates. It ended up being something like 15. Well, what was the percentage? Maybe it was several million people legally using Windows were getting dinged. Sorry, you can't use Windows. You're a pirate. Is that good business? I don't think so. Turn this stuff off. It doesn't work, doesn't slow down real piracy, and it just inconveniences honest users. Dan, who's in a truck on his way. Are you still in Virginia?
Yes.
All right. Hi, Dan. Welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, I'm looking for a rugged computer to buy, and I can't seem to find a... See what your opinion is on the best one. I see so many of them on the internet for sale.
I like the Tough Books from Panasonic. You're looking for a laptop, I presume, to use in the cab, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I see a lot of Panasonic and G-Tech or whatever. So I see lots of different models.
Yeah, and I have to say that, you know, I mean, what makes a computer rugged? The only thing you're not throwing the thing around. The only thing you have to worry about is a vibration on the hard,
right,
on the hard drive. And most hard drives nowadays, when they're not in use, will retract the head for that very reason. They're protected. Do you run the computer when you're driving?
Yes.
Okay.
I use GPS software on it.
Ah, okay. So you want to get a laptop where the hard drive is as cushioned as possible. And that's what you're going to particularly look for. You know, the Tough Books have, you know, super tough cases. Who cares? It doesn't help you.
Right.
They might have a waterproof keyboard. Who cares? That's not the issue for you. The real issue for you is vibration during the operation.
Right. And I dropped it a few times.
Yeah, but you know, almost all laptops have accelerometers built into them, so that if there's a sudden shift, like it's being dropped, it will retract the head on the hard drive and protect itself. Almost all of them do that. Now.
Okay.
Soon, you're going to be able to get hard drives that are not moving parts, that are solid state. They're flash disks.
Okay.
And that'll be good for you. Then those things will be very robust. But that isn't widely available yet.
So Panasonic would be your best choice?
I think Panasonic, I have to say, I mean, Dell does a very good job of making rugged laptops. As I said, you're not looking for a Tough Book, and you do pay extra for a Tough Book. You're looking for a laptop where the drive is well enclosed. And frankly, Dell does a very good job of insulating the drive from vibration.
Right.
So that's all you care about.
Right.
Now, somebody's telling me, and I don't know, I haven't seen these, but that Dell is also selling solid-state hard drives now. So those will be pricey. I know Alienware was, and they're pricey. But that would also solve the problem because there's no moving parts at all then.
I'm not looking for a speed or anything. The highest I've seen in those is like from 1 to 2 gigahertz processors. Is that normal?
Yeah. And that's because they're laptops. They don't want to use a lot of power. And frankly, it's plenty of speed for you. These new mobile chips, particularly the Intel Core 2 Duos, are lower megahertz ratings, but faster chips, oddly enough. It's not merely the megahertz. It's also the efficiency of the chip. They get more done in fewer cycles. So don't worry about that. Yeah, the 2 gigahertz in a laptop is plenty.
Okay. All right, cool. Thanks.
Hey, I thank you for the call. Take care. Yeah, I think there are a lot of long-haul truckers who run laptops in their cabs. If you've got experience with one that you think really works, let me know. 8888-ASK-LEO. I know we have a lot of truckers listening on XM, on Channel 152, and to the radio as well. 8888-ASK-LEO. What worked for you? Chat room is open, by the way, and that's another place to go if you've got something to add. I'm watching it. It's scrolling by pretty fast because there's almost 500 people in there right now. irc.dslextreme.com. We also have a video feed. You can watch me work if that excites you in any way. I don't know why it would. But you can watch me work at stickam.com, S-T-I-C-K-A-M.com, and there are about 1,200 people in there watching. And, of course, on the radio. TechGuyLabs.com is the website. And thanks to Make It Worse, who says Dell has the Latitude D430 uses a solid-state drive. So there might be one to look at, the D430 Latitude from Dell. More of your calls to come. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy. You better believe it. Guy. Chris Marquardt, our photo expert, coming up in just a bit. I'm looking at the Dell D430. It's a Latitude laptop with a solid-state hard drive, $2,000. Not a huge drive because it's solid-state. It's 32 gigs, but this would be ideal, I guess, for a truck or anywhere where there were a lot of vibrations. I don't know, though. I mean, here's my issue. I don't know how reliable. No one does really yet how reliable or how long they'll last, these solid-state drives. We just don't know. It's too early. I wouldn't want to be the first to own them, and you would be practically if you bought one of these. So I'm thinking just get a good laptop with a well-insulated drive. Dell puts them, wraps them in gel and, puts real shock absorbers in there. I think you're going to be fine. Again, I'd love to hear from anybody who does the same thing, who drives along with a laptop going all the time. The truth is the drive is probably not active. If you're using it just using it as a GPS, the drive's not real active. And let's not forget that we have experience with hard drives running in very extreme conditions in every hard drive iPod made. I mean, my iPod goes with me everywhere in the car. It's getting vibrated everybody as much as that laptop is doing just fine. So I think that the chances are as long as it's a well-manufactured laptop, it's going to be just fine. It's going to be just fine. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Ryan is listening in Austin, Texas. Actually, he's watching the Stickam video. Hey, Ryan.
Hello, Leo. It's actually Boston, Mass.
Where is it?
Boston, Mass.
Not Austin, Texas, but Boston, Mass. Okay, hey, close enough. Are you wearing a cowboy hat and boots? That's all I want to know.
No, I'm not.
No, you're not. All right. Well, it's great to hear from you. I love Boston, one of my favorite cities in the country. Actually, Austin is too, so there you go. What can I do for you, Ryan?
Quick question. I just bought one of the new Dell Inspiron laptops, and it's a nice machine, but whenever I plug a pair of headphones in, I kind of get like the static sound, like
right.
Kind of sounds like the old dial-up modem sound they used to sound when they were firing up.
Does it go away or does it stay there?
Even when I put the sound on mute, it still goes on. But when I'm listening to music or something, then it goes away. But whenever I push the mute stuff, when it's dead silence, it can still hear.
And if you wiggle the headphone jack or turn it, is it doing that?
Yep.
Yeah. This is an old problem. I guess it's cropping up now in computers, and it's a physical connection issue. And, we used to do this in radio. If your headphones would do this sometimes, and you just turn them. I think it's a contact issue, believe it or not. I think you want to make sure you clean off that connector. I'll be honest, I'm not a big fan of the analog ports on laptops anyway, for a number of reasons. One is that it's just a physical connection issue. But the other is that the laptop can introduce noise into it, buzz and hum and so forth. Because if you think about it, the laptop's just a transmitting like crazy radio frequency. So I usually like to use a USB interface for listening on a laptop.
And then just plug the headphones in through the USB device.
Yeah, you'll always get better sound that way. Now, I would try those headphones and some other things. The headphones may actually be what's causing the crackling.
Yeah, I've tried them on my iPod and other things, and they're fine with that.
They're fine. Okay. Yeah, it's the headphone jack, and you can't really clean it out, unfortunately. But that's what it's a bad contact on the headphone jack. It's a physical problem, believe it or not. And I don't want you spraying contact cleaner into the headphone jack. Not a good idea.
Getting the USB device in
The USB would solve that, yep.
Okay, all right, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Glad you're listening and watching. I'll wave at you in Boston. 505 people in the chat room right now, by the way. I think that's safe to say that's a new world record. For my chat. Mick the Wick from Senecaville, Ohio. We call him Mick the Wick because he makes candles. Hey, Mick.
Well, hello, Leo. How you doing there, buddy?
I'm great. How are you?
Great, great. Enjoy your chat all the time. I'm always in there as much as I can be.
I know. Well, we thank you for your contribution in there. It's pretty crazy today. I did a little experiment. I promoted it a few times during the show, and now it's just madhouse.
Yeah, and you know, we got over 500 people over there, Leo. And you know, of the 500 people plus that we have in there, they're all very polite to each other. A bunch of geeks just in there having a good time with you on your show.
I know, that's what I like about it. I always used to say it's kind of the wiseacres in the back of the classroom.
Yeah, when you say it's family friendly, they do a really good job of keeping it clean.
It is, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What can I do for you?
I've got a question, and then I got a comment in a minute. But first, the question is, I take pictures and movies of weddings and ceremonies and stuff like that. And I take the movies and burn them to DVD and then give them to them like that.
Isn't that nice?
And I also take pictures. My nephew's wedding was yesterday, and I've got one DVD with about 2 gig of movie. And then I've got about another 2 gig of pictures. I want to put all this on one DVD and give it to them.
Yeah, you're going to need some software, and the one I recommend, now, Windows Vista, if you have Ultimate Edition, comes with software to do this, but if you don't have Ultimate Edition, and it's not worth buying Ultimate Edition just for that, I would get Uleed's DVD Movie Maker, and what it does is, or Slideshow Movie Maker, what it does is it allows you to combine a slideshow and video, and that's the thing, is you're really making a video DVD, you're not making a slideshow or a movie. You're making a video DVD that has two chapters or more, and one chapter is video, and one chapter is video also, but it's a slideshow video. And you know, you could try it free for 30 days, but I've recommended it for some time. Uleed, I think it's called DVD Studio, no, because it's slideshow. DVD slideshow, something like that. ULEAD.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866 the number 2 GetNet or visit them online at dslextreme.com. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy, and the moment of truth has come for all of us. Chris Marquardt is here, our photo expert from tipsfromthetop4.com, that great photography podcast. Chris, hello. How are you?
Hey, Leo. I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm great. I got an email from somebody who said, this is great. I get Leo Laporte, my favorite radio show, and my favorite podcaster, Chris Marquardt, together.
Yay.
So
that's
nice.
Cool.
Yeah, that's really
nice.
So we're going to talk a little bit about our assignment, I guess. Yes?
Absolutely. I think it's about time to come up with a new one and look at a few of the other ones. And, Leo, I'm so proud of you. You submitted an image for the assignment.
I would have submitted more, but you're only allowed one a week. I actually have 3 images that I wanted to submit, and I didn't realize that. But that's okay.
Well,
I can't remember which one got in there.
You remember a while ago we talked about only show your best work, so kind of limiting people to select one.
Yeah,
really
that was hard to do. Yeah, that was really hard to do. But it's fun. So just for those who don't know what we're talking about a month ago, Chris, this is our second assignment. Chris assigned us just the word contrast. So a photo that illustrates contrast, and that could be photo contrast, lighting contrast, or it could be the philosophy of contrast, the definition of contrast, whatever.
The concept, basically.
The concept, anything. And we've got quite a few submissioners, which is nice. There are 474 people who are members of the group. Here's how you do it. You have to have an account at Flickr. That's free. And if you're a photographer, you should probably have one. FLICKR.com. And when you add a photo to your Flickr site, you can assign it or send it to the Tech Guy group. That's the group. You need to join that group.
Right. And we have, for this assignment, for the contrast assignment, we have 130 photos in that now. This is amazing. I mean, this community...
That was more than the alphabet last time, huh?
Well, that was kind of my fault. Looking at this, I mean, just the whole community that's kind of forming there is really amazing.
It's this is a fun thing to do. I'm really glad you're giving us assignments.
And our moderator is doing a great job.
Oh, thanks to Orbit Gal. She's spectacular, and I really appreciate... you kind of have to have an active moderator in a group like this. And
there are mini assignments to kind of make the waiting time shorter. So it's really cool.
Yeah, she's got Sunset now, and I see other tags in there. So that's great. That's really great.
We'll do a proper one this time. So
okay,
why don't we take a very short look at your picture, the one you
submitted. Please, real short.
Come on. Let's do that.
All right. This is one of my son, and who is little.
Henry?
That's Henry, and some really big tires.
Right, so you basically hit the nail on the head. It's a contrast in size. What I like about the picture is that you gave it depth. You see those three big tires behind each other, so that there is some depth from that. Then there is some shallow depth of field. The background is out of focus, which kind of helps to direct the eye towards the subject.
5D gets credit for that because it's got nice shallow.
You get lucky there.
No, well, that's one of the reasons I love the 5D and the very shallow wide aperture, because it really does give you a nice depth of field.
Right. And what I like about the picture is it's very clear what the subject is. There's one subject only, and that's your son.
Yeah, but he's not
all
in the
foreground. All the other things are the other thing, and you didn't even compose him right, like on one of those rule of third tic tac toe spots.
Yeah, I know.
But no, which is good. I mean, you broke that rule, but you still didn't squeeze him too much into the corner so that it looks awkward.
Right.
So it's you still got some room around him on the picture. So the whole thing really has quite some nice balance to it.
Okay.
So
like any good teacher, you started with the positives. What are the negatives?
Bro, I can't see much there.
Oh, good. All right. Moving on to the next one.
Absolutely not. No, this is a good picture. This
thank
is absolutely good picture. And
I like the shapes and stuff. I really like the round O's of the
tires. It is shapes, and the way you didn't cut them off in awkward angles, and the way that, for example, you could have had that tree in the background grow out of your son's head.
Well, I wasn't going to do that.
And that would have looked awkward, but
coming out of the O of the tire. I kind of like that.
And what the tree's doing, and this is exactly along the lines of our topic today, it is giving the subject a frame.
Oh.
Because today I wanted to talk about framing elements in pictures.
Frames within frames.
Frames within frames. People have done that. Artists have done that for years, for hundreds of years in their images, just put real frames around them. But if you frame a subject in some way, it doesn't have to be like on all sides. It can be partially a tree. Yeah, a tree with overhanging branches is a good idea. That really helps direct the focus towards the subject. It can be a doorway. It can be a window. It can be basically anything that gives the subject something that it can sit within. Visually,
yeah, that's it. Kind of a lot of what a photographer does in composition is direct the eye, isn't it?
Exactly, that's what it's about. I mean, you have the subject, and you want to direct the eye there. That's the basic premise of a picture.
Yeah.
And you did a pretty good job. What happens when I look at your picture? Well, first I look at this big round hole in the right bottom.
Right.
This is what draws the attention because it's bright. And it kind of jumps at me. And then I immediately notice, oh, wait a minute, there's something more going on in the picture. And my eye moves to the left top where the sun is. So you've done a pretty good job there, Leo.
Do we want to talk about anybody else's? I don't want to hog all the spotlight here. We have some. In fact, I have a link in the show notes to a number of ones that you picked out for a mention.
Right. And I'm not sure if we have enough time for that, but... there are 130 pictures.
Ones.
It's kind of hard to choose. I mean, next time I think we should just do a whole show just on reviewing images.
Okay, yeah, because there's so many good images. A number of black and white ones, you know, kind of contrasty black and white ones. I like original, what is his name? Original something maniac. Original Guamaniac.
A car, the Infineon.
He had
old
the Infineon
car
racing, racetrack with a very old car. I loved that.
That is contrast in a different sense.
Right.
But basically, the way you interpreted it, it's more the concept and not actual contrast.
Right. There's so many. We thank you all for your pictures. So much fun.
Cool.
Remember, we mentioned Dorothy's the cat on the carpet with the lines across it last week.
Yep.
And yeah, some great stuff. So if you go to the link, you can see them. And then really, I'd like to inspire you. See, he was gentle. I'd like to inspire you to contribute. And what's nice about this, and you pointed this out before, is that it's not really so much your comments. It's the comments of everybody else and some
feedback. That's what brings it alive. If everyone comes into that community and starts commenting each other's pictures, that's going to really help. And it's going to help the ones that do the comments even more than the ones that receive
them. Yeah, don't hesitate to comment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. By all means, comment.
Yeah.
So, how about a new assignment?
Oh, boy. Okay.
The word is careful.
Oh, I love it.
That's it. That's easy. And we'll end the assignment as soon as you post it yours.
Well, I already have a picture that I could post, but I guess I have to take some new ones. I have a really fun picture that says, beware of dog right next to a first aid station. And I think that would actually illustrate careful pretty well.
Okay, careful. And I'll put instructions right on the front page of
Good.
The Tech Guy Group.
Good.
Everyone can find it there.
Good. So just illustrating the concept, careful.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think we could have a lot of fun with this one.
Absolutely.
All right. And again, the idea is to go out and get new. That's why I'm not going to use this beware of dog first aid picture. Go out and get new photos that illustrate it, right?
Yep.
And we have a minute
Otherwise
or two
you
left.
You won't learn anything.
Yeah, right. This is about not about going through your old photos. This is about making new ones. So we have a little time if you want to talk about. This is our creative day. We do alternate weeks, one creative, one technical.
Yeah. And today is a creative topic. Again, framing elements.
Oh, you said that it. What am I saying?
I said it, but we can go into a slight bit more depth here because there are other ways to kind of create this attention for the subject. And we talked about some of those already, like the reduce and simplify. Keep clutter out of the picture. Too many competing things in the image can just be an issue. The shallow depth of field, what you used in your picture, is really working quite well. So you throw the background out of focus, and that helps focus the attention on the subject. And then, again, the framing element can be anything, and it doesn't necessarily have to be something in the foreground. It can be something in the background. It could be buildings in the background that frame someone who's much closer to the camera and is sitting between them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I think that should be an assignment at some point, is framing. I'll play with that. That's really fun.
Yeah, we'll still stick with careful this time, and let me just write that down here.
That's a good one for down the road. But I mean, you could combine them. You could do careful and have framing.
If you manage to get a frame in there in some way, that'll give you extra points for sure.
Extra credit. All right. Chris Marquardt is available online at tipsfromthetopfloor.com. That's where his great podcast is, and you might want to check it out too, because there are still some places left in his U.S. tour, his grand tour of the U.S. I think that's really exciting, Chris. He's going to be.
It is going to be really good, yeah.
He's going to be giving 4-day camera seminars, workshops.
It's Learning to See. That's the title.
I wish. Oh, man. If I could figure out a way. The problem is, of course, it's on the weekend, and I'm kind of busy on the weekend.
Come for 2 days.
If I could figure out a way, I will. I really want to do this. If you go to tipsfromthetopfloor.com, you'll see all the information. You're going to be in San Diego, in Florida, in Colorado.
In Minnesota and Colorado.
Minnesota. Yeah. And that's coming up in September and October. So waste no time because time is running out. Tipsfromthetopfloor.com. And we'll come back next week. What do you want to talk about next week?
Next week, we go a bit more technical. We talk about the RAW format.
Oh, I can't wait because I've been shooting nothing but RAW lately. So we'll talk about that. Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
I have to say, Chris has cost me thousands in it, buying new equipment, upgrading, getting better software, but it's fun. Photography is so fun. And the nice thing about photography is really anybody can do it. It's not, I'm never going to be able to paint a watercolor or make a sculpture, but I can take a photograph or two. And by the way, I just want to clarify, when I say shooting RAW, I don't mean shooting in the RAW. I mean, it's a format on many higher end cameras where it's not compressed. I just want to make that very clear. I think some people think that I'm shooting in the RAW, and I'm not doing that. All right, we've got a few more minutes to go, and I'd love to hear from you. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number, and we're going to take more of your calls. Of course, don't forget, the website is always there, 24/7, techguylabs.com, also my chat room, irc.dslextreme.com. And the video continues on Stick'Em. We've got links everywhere to all three of those things at techguylabs.com. My podcast network all week long, too. If you like this kind of stuff, we talk about tech. We get geeky Monday through Friday. Two podcasts a day, 7 days a week at twit.tv. Twit.tv. More of your calls to come. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Carbonite Automatic Secure Computer Backup Over the Internet. Try it free at Carbonite.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number to call. Chad is in Anaheim. Hey, Chad. Thanks for hanging on. Welcome.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you today?
Pretty good. Just waiting in line for you.
I appreciate your great patience.
Thanks. I just bought it about a year and a half ago, a 7600 NVIDIA GS card.
Okay.
And when I went to PC World and I ran those tests, the optimized tests, for some reason, I used to get a score about 180, 190, 185. Now I'm getting a video score about 67.
Ooh.
And it seems like when it gets to that line drawing test where it looks like a bunch of little, like one line, and just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, it goes real slow. But the other tests run quick, but for some reason, the card slows down on that test right there.
You know, maybe you get a second opinion. Go to futuremark.com.
Okay.
I don't know if this is the same ones PC World's using, but they make really the definitive benchmark programs, and they have free versions of their video benchmarks. And I would.
Okay, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
I would just get a second opinion. It's the same card that's slower, or is a newer card that should be faster and is slower?
No, it's my score used to be for the video score.
For the same card, or for a different card?
Yes, it's the same card. Uh-huh,
so
yes.
Is there anything else that's changed?
No, nothing else. I updated a driver from NVIDIA about 2 months ago.
Yeah, maybe a bad driver. You know, the newer driver isn't necessarily a step forward. It should be, but it's not unusual for a company to put out a newer driver that's actually slower.
Huh. Okay, let me try to. What was that one website you just told me?
FutureMark. They make the ones that the benchmarks that all the pros use, and they have commercial versions, and then they have basic editions that are free. I would try 3DMark, which is really the standard in 3D performance. It uses actual game engines. And when you're seeing benchmarks on most of the test sites, that's what they're using is 3DMark. There's a basic edition that's free, and then there's for $20 you can get the advanced edition.
Okay. All right, Leo, thank you very much.
Yeah, see what it says. And then it may indeed be that the driver upgrade didn't give you more performance. That can happen, absolutely, for a lot of reasons. Sometimes, for instance, they will modify the driver. I should have asked him if it was Vista or XP, but for instance, they may modify the driver to support copy protection in Vista, which could very well slow everything down a lot. A lot. So it's not a bad idea when you update drivers to keep the old driver. Windows usually, you know, has a driver rollback feature, and often you'll be able to roll back to the previous driver. Be worth testing, you know, getting a good benchmark result, then doing a rollback, and then seeing if you get better performance. It can happen. It can happen. Brian's in Riverside, California. Hey, Brian, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. How you doing today? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. I have a Trio 700WX. And can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, good. And I wanted to play video on it. You know, like the videos you normally watch on your computer. But mm-hmm. The problem is that the Windows media that comes on the phone isn't very good. It's Windows Mobile 5.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to really want to play. And I tried, I used VLC on the computer because it doesn't seem to have any problems with codecs. But I want to know, do you recommend any programs to view video on the Trio?
It may merely be that the processor is not fast enough to do larger video files. You may have to actually, modify those files, make them smaller, make them more playable. Where are you getting the files from?
From various sources. Some of them are torrent.
Okay,
you know,
right. So what I probably would do is transcode them to a smaller frame rate.
How do you change the pixel dimension? Because I think that it's either 240 by 240 or 320 by 320.
Well, and that's a really good example of something that if it's at a higher resolution than the phone is capable of, it'll spend a lot of energy unnecessarily.
Right, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Because most of these videos are at like 512, 640.
Right,
you know?
Right, there you go. There's a perfect example. Yeah.
And I want to shrink them down. Is there a way to do that?
Absolutely. There are a number of programs. There's a Tsunami MPEG encoder, which is free. Let me see if Vidiora. Vidiora is usually what I recommend. Videora.com. They have a paid version, and then they have free versions that are specific to different players. And what you want is one that's for Windows Media. And then in all of these transcoders will allow you to say, I want this frame rate, I want this resolution, and so forth. And I think that'll help you a lot. You know, just taking the frame rate down, for instance, making it to 20 instead of 30 or 25 instead of 30 could make a big difference. Just make that file smaller, because it's a phone. It doesn't have a huge, I think it has a 200 or 300 megahertz X-scale processor in there. It's not a super fast processor.
Right. It's a 312.
312, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so, and Vidiora, or what was the other program that you mentioned?
Vidiora, and then the other one is, this one is more of a by hand. It's the Tsunami MPEG encoder. And let me find the website for you. I can never remember the URL.
Yeah.
It's TMPGENC. So TMP, Tsunami, MPEG, TMPGENC.net.
Okay.
And that'll take an AVI and convert it to MPEG-1, which might play back better. I mean, it's one of those things. Probably the best thing would do is just go on the net and Google, you know, video for the 700WX and find out. I bet you there are people who have all the exact settings you should have and the programs you should use to get it to work.
Yeah, the problem was I couldn't find a program that actually
would do
made
it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say take a look at Vidiora. That's really designed to do a variety. I presume you're on Windows, and that Vidiora is designed to do a variety of different formats. Let's get one more in here before we wrap things up. Joanna has been so patient, hanging on the line from Riverside, California. I can't go without talking to you. Hello, Joanna.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. It's so exciting to talk to you.
Oh,
I listen to you all the time.
Thank you so much.
But I have a huge problem. My son figured out how to download porn on his PSP little handheld device.
Now, I have to say, that's pretty he's an ingenious kid. Oh, I can't believe I'm out of time. Hang on the line. I'll talk to you off the air about ways you can block porn. It's a tough thing, though, when he's that old. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week! Hi, Joanna. Hey, Joanna.
Hello.
Thank you for hanging on. I'm sorry we just ran out of time there, but I didn't want to leave you in the lurch.
Oh, you know, it would have been important, too, because I don't know if other parents know that these kids could do that.
Well, it's really it's just a case of him downloading the porno, and once you've got video on your system, you could put it on anything. I mean, it's like the last caller, you could easily put it on your phone, anything that'll play back video, and the PSP is designed to play back video. I have to say, playing back video on your PSP is probably not the... I mean, to be honest with you, it's more for the show-off and the geek factor than anything else. But the real issue, you're not going to be able to keep them from putting it on the PSP. The real issue is you got to keep them from downloading it.
Okay.
And that's much more difficult, especially since he's 15 and sounds like he's fairly computer savvy.
Yeah, him and his friends at school.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you could, here's, you know, what you could do. You could get a device or you could get software to block it on your home systems to prevent it, to filter it. And then he just go to his buddy's house.
Yeah, I know. That's a problem. I put password on my Wi-Fi at home, but he's able to, you know, there's a browser in there, and he's able to connect to wherever there's a Wi-Fi connection, right. And then go, you know, go to a browser and, type in sex or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, so he's actually, he's downloading it onto the PSP. He's not even downloading it onto a computer first.
Right, exactly. And I went to upload music for him, and I went into the video section of his thing, and I saw porn there, and I went, what?
It's so, I'll be honest with you, and this is a problem. I mean, I have teenagers, too. This is just a very difficult problem for parents, and I don't know of any solution. You could take the PSP away. That's about it.
Yeah. Gosh.
If
Sony and parental controls, but all they have to do is just reset it, and the password will just be reset.
So. He's hacked his PSP already for him to be able to do that. He's already modified it, so he's pretty sophisticated. And if he's smart enough to take it down the street to an open access point and download there, short of taking away the PSP, I don't know of any way you could modify that PSP so he couldn't do that.
Okay. Oh, that's a bummer. All right.
Yeah, I know. Joanna, you have my absolute sympathy, and I just think that this is a problem that we all have to, as parents, we're all dealing with, and I don't know of any way to prevent them, just because there's so many ways for them to now get access to that stuff.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is I gave him an AOL account, one of the kid ones, you know, the one for like up to 9 years old or whatever, and I had no idea that in the Windows Media Player there's a browser in there and that they can browse unfiltered.
Once he's online with AOL, he can do anything he wants.
It's him and his friends are just figuring out ways around it.
Well, and that's the real problem, is that they're more tech savvy probably than you are. They have the will, you know, a very strong desire to do this. I don't know of any. I mean, look, porno is now endemic in our society. There's no way you can keep him from doing it.
Yeah, gosh.
I could come up with some sort of tech, you know, maybe way to lock down the PSP, but all that's going to do is push him to some other device.
Yeah, that's true, huh? Oh boy!
I know. You know, I think that it's not abnormal for a 15-year-old to do this. It's the thing that scares me is that the kinds of porn that they can get now on the internet are just outrageous. I mean, it's just much worse than it used to be. I mean, it's not that they look like they're looking at Playboy. I mean, this stuff is repulsive.
Oh, the one he had in there was just like, oh my God.
I know, and I think all our kids are seeing this stuff. I don't know what the long-term result's going to be, but I think all our kids are seeing this stuff, or if they're not, my daughter, 15, is not watching it, but I know that the boys she knows are.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's even scarier for me as a parent of a teenage daughter.
That's right.
So the expectations have changed, but you know what, Joanna? I think it's a societal thing. I don't think it's something that we as parents, we could... Every time I look at technological controls to this, my bottom line is if the kid's motivated and has any savvy or friends, they can get around it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I guess we just got to, teach him that it's not reality.
That's what I've chosen. Yeah, that's basically what I've done. You know, my 13-year-old started to dabble in this, and I've said, you know, look, this is not how real people act. These people are, you know, they're abused. It's not normal. They're being paid to do this. They wouldn't normally be doing this. You know, you just try all the, you know, you just have to talk to them. But it's it really scares me. I think every teenager in our society is now growing up with basically access to this stuff.
Yep. That's right.
I don't think we can prevent it. It'd be a good topic for a conversation at some point on the show because, I think all of us as parents of teenagers are looking at this now going, oy, oy, oy.
Yeah.
So I'm basically my bottom line is there's no magic bullet. There's no technological solution for you, Joanna.
Okay.
I'm sorry. And we will talk about it on the show. Maybe you can call back next week and we can talk some more about it.
Okay. Thank you so much
again.
Thank you. Your show is so great. I love it.
Bless you. And I really appreciate your calling in. Take care.
But you too. Bye-bye.
Alrighty. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcatching client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.